Thank you. Hi, I'm glad to have an opportunity to speak as well. I warn the next speaker, I don't know who he is, that all the introductions are coming off his time, not mine. First of all, to say it's a pleasure to see all of you here, especially in these numbers. It's encouraging to me to know that probably the great majority of you are graduates of Yeshiva University or various schools, and to see you all here in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, in HaKodesh, that in itself fulfills for me the Zman Simchasenu. It's a pure delight, and I thank you for coming here to let me see what Yeshiva has produced and how it has enriched the life of Medinat Yisrael. My talk today is going to be divided into several parts. I don't know if the other speakers after me are going to speak about the halacha that relates to Hoshana Rabbah. They may or may not, so I'm just going to give a very brief introduction to the halacha, and then I'm going to go off into something quite different. Now, about the halacha, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us that there are machlokes tanaim. Where does the din of Hoshana Rabbah come from? Hoshana Rabbah, the major part is the Arava, the Hashanas. They call the Hashanas in popular talk the Arava, the Chibat Arava, the beating of the Arava, and the marching of the Arava around the Mizbeach or around the Sefer, around the Bima. Where does it come from? So one opinion was it's Yesod Hanaviyim. The other one is Minhag HaNeviim. One opinion is the rabbis, the Neviim rather, establish it. And Rashi says, which Neviim? The last Neviim. Chagi Zachariim Alavi. They were the ones who established it. They established many things, many takanot, and so they had a takana as well of the Arava. The other opinion is that it's Minhag Neviim. That means not that they formally established it, but informally they introduced the idea, and it took root, and the people took it over. They did what the Nevi'im wanted, and therefore it's a minhag. What is the difference if it's Yisod HaNevi'im or Minhag HaNevi'im? And the answer is, if it's Yisod HaNevi'im, it is strictly halacha. And therefore, even though it's Medivei Sofrim, Medivei Rabbanan, it means you've got to do it. And apparently, if you say that it's Yisod HaNevi'im, that they established it formally, you'd have to make a bracha, as you do for every mitzvah. The other opinion is that it's minhag neviim. If it's minhag neviim, you can't make a bracha. Why not? Why not? Well, I'll answer it. If we had time, I'd let you answer it. Because the bracha is asher kedeshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al netilat arava, let's say. You can't say b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. There was no command. There was no decision by the Nevi'im, you have to do it. It's simply, it's a minhag, it comes not from above, from below, from the people themselves. And therefore, there's no vitzivanu. So the mashma'ut, apparent maskana, because the decision of the Gemara is that it's minhag Nevi'im. And therefore, there's no bracha. The Rambam gives a little twist on that. He says, no, the minhag Nevi'im was you don't make a bracha. So it's a slight difference. Having said that, let me come to the essence of my talk. I'd like to think to address three rather difficult or strange or weird, in some cases, minhagim that apply or that are apparent in these days of Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeres. They're different and they're interesting, and I hope you'll give it a hearing. The Ramah, in his commentary on Hilchos Lulav, says as follows. Katu harishan imzal. It's hard for me to speak. Nice. I like Svaradit, but when you read a halachic text, I will slip into Ashkenazi, but I'll try. Katu harishan imzal, sheyesh siman betzel halavana, b'leila shana rabba. Hit one. Mashi. Mashi. Can you hear me? Okay, Rama says, but there's a minhag rishonim. Of course, it's not a minhag, but the rishonim said that there is a minhag, strange minhag, that on the eve of a Shana Rabbah, you go out into the open air and you try to see the shadow of the moon on the lay of a Shana Rabbah. And when you contemplate the moon, if you're careful, you can foretell what will happen to you and your relatives for the following year. A very, very strange a comment. The moon, the shadow of the moon, you can see what's going to happen the coming year. Actually, to this day, I know there are people on Shana Rabbah get very nervous. After all, it's the Chatima, it's the last time or the last judgment that is passed upon us in the coming year, and they feel very upset and very nervous and very agitated. And they walk around and looking around to find the shadow, if it's following them or not. It would be funny if it weren't sometimes tragic, because people think get very confused by it. But first, before I go further and try to trace the origins of this interesting minhag, let me complete what the Rama says. V'yesh mi shekatav she'ein ledakdek bezeh. Never mind it. Don't pay attention to it. V'yoter tov liyot tamim v'lo lachkorach asidot. Best of it, be tamim tiyeh m'shem alekecha, be open, be naive. It's a kind of transcendental naivete. Accept what you have. Don't try to look into the future by all kinds of mysterious and magical means. Forget about it. Don't let this bother you. The Rama says, basically, don't let this bother you. But where does it come from? Actually, if you think about it, you investigate it, it comes from the Hasidei Ashkenaz. Hasidei Ashkenaz were not Hasidim in the contemporary sense, but they were very pious people in the Middle Ages of Germany, in probably the 12th, 13th century. And they had a whole set of minhagim that had been written about extensively by many scholars, some of them quite unusual. When it comes to the business of the tzeil of the shadow under Shana Rabbah, many of them used to gather in the fields completely undressed and contemplate the moon and see whether they can see a shadow by the light of the moon. I do not recommend it in Yerushalayim. Especially, for some reason, they were anxious to see if the head had a shadow. So, if the head has a shadow, then you're okay. If the head doesn't have a shadow, it's one of two things. Either it's bad luck, or you don't have a head. I mean, it's one of the two things. But the point that was the custom that had developed, and that's where all of this comes from. So the question is, what's going on here? Where does this come from? What does it imply? Is there any meaning to it for us? And in all the matters I'm going to discuss with you, I'm looking for some universal meaning that can be of help to us in our own lives. So here we have this strange minhag, and I suspect, and I'm pretty sure it's correct, that all of it comes from one pasuk in the Torah. In the times of the Meraglim, when Yahushua and Kareh ben Yefuna came to their report, and they encouraged the people and said, don't be afraid of the power, the apparent power of the Canaanites, whose lands we are going to take over. It says, because Kilach Menuhem, they are our bread, we got them beaten. V'sar tzilam me'alehem, their tzeil, the shadow, is departed from them. Now what does that mean? Their shadow, their tzeil, has departed from them. So Rashi tells us that it means that who are the protectors of the people? Protectors are its gedolim, who by virtue of their sincerity and their activity and their creativity can make the people prosper and make them survive. And it means that Iyov, who was one of the great Hasidei Umot HaOlam, had died, and therefore they had no tzeil. Or, says Rashi, apparently more rationally, God's shadow had departed from them. God's protective shadow, his anane hakavod, as it were, his tzeil that was on them to protect them, has departed from them, said Kalev and Yoshua, so don't worry about them, we've got them beaten, because Sarat Silam me'aleihem. Now the question is, what happens to this passage, Sarat Silam aleihem? The Ramban quotes Rashi, who says that it means either that their protectors, their giants, their people who are great, had died, or that God himself had decided to withdraw his covering, his protective cover from them. And he says, Yafeh Piresh, Rashi commented well, but he said, Aval Yitachen, Shirmoz HaKatuv, Lamashe Noda, Ki Belel HaChotem, Lo Yitzel Lerosh Ish Asher Yamut Beshanahi. It means that, as is well known, this is called the Chotem. Hashanah Rabbah is the Chotem. If you say Chatmenu, this is the last seal of our destiny. That the Leil HaChotem, if you don't see the shadow of your head, then you know that you won't see another Hashanah Rabbah again. That's the Ramban speaking. So he refers, therefore, back to this same idea that somehow the shadow of the head has some kind of metaphysical repercussions in one's life, either one way or another. Then, that having been said, there are many who also speak about Sar Tzilam, but are a bit more rationalistic than Ramban, and more like Rashi. For instance, the Akedat Yitzchak, one of the great commentators of medieval Spain, said that it's not Tzilam, but, guess anyone? Sar Tzelem Me'aleim. The Tzelem Elokim has departed from them. Not Tzilam, but Tzelem. It may be somewhat not in accord with the exact punctuation of the word, but the concept is not anything magical and mysterious like a tzel, a shadow, but Tzelem. Their image, the image of God, which makes a person live and prosper, has departed from them, and therefore they are not going to be able to prevail against Am Yisrael. Or the Gerasin Eibeshitz in his Shalom Dvash, the same thing. Sar Tzalmachot Selam Elokim Diyukhna Damalka Kadisha Me'alecha. The Tzalem, which means that part of man which reflects the holiness of the Divine King, which means the drop of holiness that each of us, not drop, the basic holiness that each of us possesses by virtue of our humanity, especially of our Jewishness, but really all humanity, that Selem has departed. In other words, before the Canaanites sinned, they had the Selem Elohim. Selem Elohim is universal. But because of their conduct, they have abandoned, they have lost, they have forfeited the Selem Elohim, and therefore they cannot prevail against Am Yisrael. There's also an interesting Hasidic explanation about the tzel on Hashanah Rabbah. And that is the Sfas Emes. He says, why do we speak about Sar Tzelem, Sar Tzel Rabbah? And he says that the power of the Sitra Achara is the Kabbalistic term for the other side, which means the converse of Kedusha, the opposite of Kedusha. And he says basically it's this. If a man finds he wants to conduct himself in a proper way, in the Jewish way in life, the ethical way, the moral way, but he has urges, he has deep urges, passions that are, what do we call them in Hebrew? Yetzer hara. The Yetzer hara is very powerful. It overwhelms him. So he says he should know that it's nothing but a shadow. The Yetzer hara is totally insubstantial. It's only a projection. It's a psychological projection. It has no reality, no substance. So Sar Tzilam, we have to see through it that when we engage in the battle with the Yetzer hara, and everyone has a Yetzer hara of one kind or another. If you didn't have a Yetzer hara, you wouldn't be alive. It's part of life. So when you confront your Yetzer hara, when you look at the mirror and say, is this right or wrong? And you have an urge to do that which is wrong. Recognize that urge is not anywhere near as powerful as you imagine. It's a conjection. It's a picture. It's a spoof. It's nothing real. Really, it's only a tzel, as insubstantial as a tzel, as a shadow. That having been said, allow me, please, to tell you how I read the story of the tzel, not historically, but rather what it means for us, and what it it should mean for us. I think that, you know, the shadow is a symbol. If you just check in the literature, there's a great literature about Zeil. Many, many writers who write about folklore and things of that sort have a great deal to say about shadows. It's done Jungian philosophy. Jung is the one who thought of Freud. Jungian philosophy has a great deal to say about shadows. Most of it I don't understand. What I understand, I don't particularly appreciate. But there's a great deal written about it. All the great anthropologists have written about shadows. Each one has a different shot. So I'm entitled to my shot, too. I think of the shadow when you say, he casts a shadow. To cast a shadow means to be substantial. If you're not substantial, then there's no shadow. But if you're substantial, if you're real, if you have something to say, something to live for, something to teach others, something real about you, then you say, he casts a shadow. Because it means that you're real, you're not porous, you're solid, and because you're solid, you cast a shadow. And therefore, I see the story of the Zeil, the significance of the Zeil, that every single person must strive to cast a shadow on his environment, on his family, even on history itself. Casting a shadow, casting a Zeil, means to leave a legacy, to accomplish great things. It doesn't have to be famous things, but everyone has to outdo himself or herself. Everyone has to strive to leave some legacy for his family, for his community, for his people, for all the world. Not everyone can leave a great legacy that all people will talk about over the next 100 years. Rather, everyone should do something more than he or she thinks he can accomplish. To overtry, to go more than you think you can do. To leave something for your family, something important. To cast a shadow. If you don't cast a shadow, then Hoshana Rabbah has no good news for you. It requires of us on this Yom HaChotem, this last Yom HaDin, to figure out what really can we do that will create a shadow that will protect our children, our family, our people, our society, community, world. It doesn't have to be something very famous. It doesn't have to be something that the whole world will talk about. It has to be something that will satisfy you, that will satisfy me, that we're doing more than was expected of us or that could have been expected of us. It means to try to do more, not to be satisfied with what we have done or are doing. Let me give you an example of how Gedolei Yisrael dealt with this. There's a great Gemara in Chum. The Gemara in Chum Davov tells us that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, as he's called, was confronted with a problem because Rav Meir had wanted to eat something that from Bet Shan. Bet Shan is questionable whether it's in Israel, in really Eretz Yisrael, not in Eretz Yisrael. And so Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi paskin that Rav Meir did right, that Bet Shan is not chayiv in Trumas and Masras. He's not required to give the tithe in Masras. So what's bad about that? Because soon his brothers and his father's entire family ganged up on him. And they said, how dare you? We have a tradition that Bet Shan is part of Eretz Yisrael, is chayiv in Masras. How can you go ahead and decide on your own? You may be a Rabbeinu HaKadosh, but how can you do it on your own to go against all of tradition? And here the remarkable answer that he gives with Rashi's commentary. Amru lo, the makom she'avotecha va'avot avotecha nahagu bo isur, atad hineg bo heter. Your whole family tradition was to say it's forbidden, and you are going to say it's permitted? Amar Rabbi, hinichu li avotai makom lehikader bo. My ancestors left me some place to maneuver, some place where I can do my thing. Some place where I can have a psak that I think is right, even though they did not accept it. And he says, the Gemara says, you see, inichu l'makom avotai l'kader bo. God, my parents, my ancestors left me some place where I can spread my wings, where I can cast a shadow, where I can do, and again, a sense of fame. And therefore, says the Gemara, Mikan, from here we learn, the Talmid Chacham, She'amar Dvar Halacha, She'ein Maznichen Oto. If a Talmid Chacham comes to a decision that's unpopular, don't get angry with him. Don't reject him. Because he has the right, if he does it in all sincerity, he has the right to his opinion, even if it goes against the majority. And Rashi says, Kishiyavo Benenu, Benenu Acharenu, if our, when our children follow us, in lo yimtzu malataken, if they have nothing that they can say of their own, there's nothing that they can correct, that they can fix, that can do more than their ancestors, if that's the case, then the question is, b'mei yigdal shmam? How will their name become great? You see what he's saying? Everyone has not only the right, but the duty to do his thing and to leave a legacy, to leave a shadow. And if you're going to say that because it was once decided, therefore you can't do it anymore, then it goes for me, it goes for my children, it goes for you, it goes for all of us, for all of history. So what are we going to do? Where's the creativity? Where's the sense of chidush? That's what we have to emphasize, says Rabbi Yehuda and Rashi. And he says, Mikan, here we learn, Sheda'inu shekiber Rabbi Eidezu, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi accepted this teaching, V'lamad himena, and he learned from it, Afa pi shedavar temahu, even though his psak was rather surprising, shocking even shocking. Nevertheless, hareme olam hayu nevbisa, lamadnu, she'ein maznichin, or emezichin, tamit chacham, or amed var alacha, chidush lehem, or lo shamati, ein maznichin. You don't say, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't reject it simply because it has never been done before. Just because it has never been done before is no reason why it shouldn't be done now. And then, you're not allowed to reject the Mishmuato from his learning, from his decision, Lamar, to say to him, Chazor v'cha, change your mind, Ga'avatcha g'armalach, you made this decision on your own as a sign of your personal arrogance, you didn't hear carefully what your teachers told you, and therefore, says Rashi, just emphasizing what Rabbi Yehuda says. I find this Gemara to be astounding, to be beautiful, to be wonderful. And of course, there are many people in our community who would find this objectionable. How dare you have your own ideas? How dare you strike out on your own? How dare you think on your own? We are not a generation that celebrates personal thinking. It's much easier to make everybody conform. But there is a principle we have. It's Shas. It's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It's not a sort of a pint-sized philosopher who's saying this. This is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the redactor of the Mishnah, and one of the greatest names in Jewish history. Everyone has a place where he can make his mark, his or her mark. No matter how unimportant you think you may be, and you're not, but no matter how unimportant you may be in your own eyes, you have got to make a contribution, a small contribution, a little contribution, but something that's your own and that casts a shadow and that creates a better life, a better environment for those who follow you. In this sense, looking for one's shadow on the Yom HaChotem, as the Ramban calls it, makes excellent sense. It tells us, surprisingly, that you've got to have ambition. Everyone has to have ambition. You have to be willing to put your name on something that's yours, whether it's in charity, whether it's in chesed, whether it's in Torah, whether it's in moral works, whether it's in social betterment. You've got to have something where you put your stamp on it and make that your legacy. And that's your tzeil, which on Hoshana Rabbah becomes so important. So I invite all of you to take this into consideration and to make sure that by the time tomorrow is done, you have decided that you're going to see your shadows, and the shadows are going to be significant because they'll be of benefit to your family, to your society, to your community, to all of us. So not seeing a shadow, I can understand in this sense, is a bad omen. Seeing your shadow is a good omen because it means you have riveted up all your personal qualities, your personal talents, your personal ambitions, and directed in a constructive way that you and only you and no one else can do. That's number one. Number two, and totally unrelated, apparently. When we leave the Sukkah and Shemini Atzeres, And tradition tells us, actually, it's a Gemara too, tells us that you make a special prayer. Does anyone know how that prayer is? It's a very interesting one. It says, you hear that song, you say, we may be the good of our Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shekiyamti v'yashavti b'sukkah zu, such as I have had the schus to make this sukkah, kein ezke l'shana haba'a l'shei b'sukkat oro shel livyatan. So in the coming year, may I dwell in the sukkah of the skin, the leather of the Leviathan. Wow. It's also not easily understandable. What is the Leviathan? Leviathan is one of the legendary sea monsters. Leviathan was created one of the Taninim HaGadolim. It's a great fish, a great whale, some sea monster. And in Jewish life, it stands for what? What does it stand for, anyone? For evil. The Leviathan is the symbol of evil. So I ask you, what is this business of the skin of Leviathan? I mean, I've heard people want to have golden sukkahs, they want to have all kinds of a leather sukkah made from a sea monster. What does it mean? Anyone venturing that? Good. I'll try myself then. I take it as follows. Very often it happens that you want to really conduct yourself in a better manner than you have heretofore. You want to be a bit more observant. You want to do things that are lefnim yishur ha'sedin. Or in a society which does not relish even doing things kadin, you want to do it properly. You want to do it kahalacha. Maybe more than halacha. Better. Why don't we do it? Because we're afraid of the cynics. We're afraid of the cynics, the mockers, who will say, huh, look who's from now. You know the great story about the rabbi before Ne'ila comes before the Aron Kodesh and says, Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm a nobody, I'm nothing. Hasan sees that, so he goes before the Aron Kodesh. Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm a nobody, I'm a nothing. The Shammah sees that, he goes and says, Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm a nobody. And the Chazan nudges the rabbi and says, look who's a nobody now. You know, it's very easy to puncture holes in somebody who is perfectly legitimate and perfectly honorable. Look who's getting super pious. Look who's getting so concerned. Well, who does he think she is? Who does she think she is? There's a sharp criticism that can undo the best of intentions. If we pay attention to such criticisms, we are in big trouble. And therefore, what does the Oro Shel Leviathan mean? Leviathan has a thick skin. Leviathan doesn't give a darn what the little fish say. He does what he darn well pleases. It means that if we want to do something that's good and decent and righteous, and something that's l'chodo shel ha'makom l'chodo shel Torah, don't be afraid of the criticisms of the petty people who are going to try to puncture holes. Have a thick skin. You know, if you tell the godfather of the mafia, even the Jewish mafia, that because he is doing what he's doing, he's not going to get to open the ark during the Ne'ilah, he won't be impressed. It doesn't bother him. You have to have a thick skin and not to worry about the cynics who try to puncture you and try to deter you from doing what you know and what you want to do as the right thing. It's a very important principle. Some people do not do it because they're afraid, actually. Let me give you another instance how the Talmud decides. It's a funny Gemara in Kedushin. I think this is even a funny Gemara and funny traditions. The Gemara says that Oreshi Yitzro Mitgaber Alav. If someone sees that his Yetzer Hara is getting the better of him, such situations sometimes do happen, you know. Yetzer Hara gets the better. I think every person has such situation at least once in his life. Some have it every day. Oreshi Yitzro Mitgaber Alav. What should he do? So the Talmud gives a piece of advice that's shocking. Yelech l'makom she'ein makirin oto, let him go to a place that no one knows who he is. Yilbash shchorim, let him get dressed. In those days, shchorim meant no one will think you're a religious person. Today, yilbash shchorim means you're going to become super firm. But go wear clothing such that you will not be recognized by people. And there, in total anonymity, yaseh mashalibo chafetz, do what your heart wants. That's a mouthful. You hear what the Talmud says? You have a Yetzer Hara, you can't control it, you want to express it, then change your clothing, change your name, take off your yarmulke, go to a place where no one sees you, where no one knows you. Yasem mashalibo chafez, do what your heart is pushing you to do. Oy is right. Someone said oy. It's correct. Let me tell you how the Kuska interpreted that Gemara. Kuska Rebbe said that there are two Yetzirim that a person has, the Yetzir Tov and the Yetzir Hara. Where the Talmud says that Oesh Yetzirim is Gaber Alav. He said, a man or woman sees that his or her Yetzir Tov is getting the better of him. She wants to do the right thing. But what is she afraid of? What is he afraid of? That people will denounce him, people will question his sincerity, people will say, look who thinks he's a nobody now, and they will simply deter him, they'll stop him in his tracks. All his efforts at self-improvement spiritually will come to grief. So what should he do? Let him go to a place where no one recognizes him, where they can say, look who thinks he's a nobody now, and v'yaseh mashalibo chafez, do what his heart tells him. What's in his heart? Not the Yetzer Hara, but his heart is the Yetzer Tov. Sometimes you want to do the right thing, you're afraid you'll be questioned and criticized. Again, the answer is thick skin. You have to live in the Sukkot Oro Shaliv Yatan. And in that case, we understand what the tefillah is. We hope that next year we will learn to live in this kind of Sukkah, and therefore, if we want to improve our ways of life, which after all the Yamim Noraim from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Shemini Atzeres push us to do, is to progress. So don't worry about the critics, don't worry about the cynics, don't worry about the mockers. Just do what you have to do and have a thick skin. My third and final one. For all these days since the beginning of the Yomim Noraim, we read a chapter of Tehillim. Ashkenazim, Sephardim do not do this, but Ashkenazim do. But even Sephardim know this is a very, very beautiful tefillah. And that is the David Hashem Ori V'Yeshi. And in the course of this very beautiful, it's called the penitential psalm, because it is a psalm, a tehillim, a tefillah of tshuva. It really is tshuva. So we say, Achat she'alti meit Hashem ota bakesh, one thing I ask of God, and that I request, ota bakesh, shifti bebeit Hashem kol yamei chayai, that I be able to dwell in the house of God all the days of my life, right? Shifti bebeit Hashem kol yamei chayai, lachazot ben noam Hashem, to behold the pleasantness of Hashem, and then ulevaker b'heichalo, and to visit His temple. What's going on? You just asked the Rebbeinu Shlom to let you live in the Beit Hashem all the days of your life. He wants to quit his political involvement with the Melech. He wants to stop his kingdom business. He wants to go into a Beis Medrash, join a kollel, and live in the shul in the Beis Medrash all the days of his life. And he also wants to visit it. It seems to be perfectly contradictory. If you're not going to visit a place you're permanently in. My answer to that is, and I think it's correct, I think the word levaker, to visit, is a modern Hebrew. It's not really biblical Hebrew. So what then does it mean? It means many things, but I'll tell you the word that I prefer, and there's a hint of it in the Sefer HaSharashim of Radak. It means, I pray, says David HaMelech, that I be permitted to dwell in the Beit Hashem all the days of my life. And what would I do there? Levaker b'heichalo, from the word boker, to bring in the dawn, to bring in light and freshness and joy into the life of the Beit Midrash of the Heichal Hashem. The Bakir Baheichalot doesn't mean to visit. It means to introduce light and beauty and luminescence into the lives of people. So it's important not only to be in the Beit Hashem and to build up my own intellectual data, my own lumdus, but also to bring joy and life and light, dawn, into the lives of the people around me, of family, friends, society, community, anyone else. And I believe that this is the real meaning of the term and the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. What does Bikur Cholim mean? It doesn't really mean only to visit the sick. Of course you visit the sick. You're not going to do it from afar. The better meaning of Bikur Cholim, and it doesn't take away from the original meaning, is to bring dawn into the life of the patient, to visit him or her, and in an intelligent way, without being extravagant, to bring in some joy, make him smile, make him laugh, let him look at life with a more optimistic way. And you have no idea how important that could be, and I would add something else. It just happened because of the experiences that I had this week in Yerushalayim. It's not only important to bring joy and light in the Bikur Cholim of the Chole himself, but even more in the life of the one who is giving the care to that Chole. I've often been heard from doctors who deal with it in Alzheimer's, Chas v'shal, Chas v'chalila, it's not the patient who is the main victim. It's the major caregiver who's the victim. And Bikur Cholim, I think, in its highest sense, means not only to bring, you know, when a person has Alzheimer's, there's very little you can do for him. Physically you can do, mentally, psychologically, very little you can do. What can you do? You can tell the major caregiver, let me take over for a day, for an hour. Or take that person, get him or her out of the framework of depression that always surrounds serious illness, and lift his spirits or her spirits. Make him feel there's light at the end of the tunnel, there's light even now. Bringing that kind of sense of boker into the life of either the patient, but both the patient and the caregiver, is of the greatest importance. Because sometimes you have a patient who is very important in our lives, very important in the community, and then he gets sick. In the beginning, people visit and ask and call, and then later on, he's forgotten. Nishkach min halev. Forgotten altogether. And that's a tragedy. It's a terrible tragedy. I think it requires of us, levaker behichalo, but also to levaker cholim, to be able to bring life and joy into that person's life and the person in the life of the caregiver, of the family, whoever it is, just to say a good word, just a call, something, some communication, so that that person not feel that he's been left behind the times, abandoned. He's no longer part of the current and the streams of active life. Bring him back into it. Tell him what's happening. Make him smile. Opening that window and letting the sun shine in is probably the greatest mitzvah you can perform in Bikur Cholim. So, to summarize, we've discussed three interesting text passages, comments. One of them is to fulfill yourself by deciding to do more than you can, by casting a shadow of one kind or another, by writing a book, or taking care of a child, or saying a good word, or devising a new way of teaching, anything at all. More than you've done in the past is required at Simcha at Hoshana Rabba. Before, at the time of the Chotem, it requires that we cast a shadow, and that cast a shadow is done by making up your mind, by resolving not to be deterred by the cynics, by the people who demean you or belittle what you're trying to do, who want to laugh at you, don't let it bother you. Have a thick skin. And then above all, use all this to bring boker, to bring dawn and joy and happiness into the lives of those around you. So with that, I wish you a gemar chatima tova, a powerful shadow, a great deal of thick-skinned ability to show light to soul, light and joy in the lives of all of Klal Yisrael. Thank you. Thank you.